content discussed on this show is not necessarily the opinion of the cast of Spiritually Raw, and topics quite often are for mature audiences only. So, if you happen to have your 13-year-old listening in,
that's your problem.
Welcome back to Spiritually Raw. We are so excited to be with you today. And our guest, Sherry, Jay's going to tell you all about her in just a minute. I want to just take a quick second and thank everybody for tuning in and sharing the videos, subscribing. And boy, oh boy, are you leaving a lot of comments.
Tons of comments.
So lots of great comments too. And we really appreciate it. We read each one. I'm trying to get back to every one of them. And it really just means the so much to us that you're taking the time to watch our videos and comment and also share them. You're helping the channel grow by leaps and bounds. It helps with all of the, what is that when it goes up the YouTube, the analytics.
Yeah, whatever. It just goes up. The numbers go up and you're sharing it. It's going good. Thank you.
And it helps with the analytics for people trying to find us, and we really greatly appreciate it. So with that being said, Jay, let's get rolling.
Let's roll. So we got Sherry Lassiter on today. Sherry Lassiter. I've been saying it, Sherry.
Short for Cheryl.
Author of A Modest Choice to be released in July 2020. And it's based on Sherry's own past life memories of being a Vestal Virgin.
A Vestal Virgin.
In ancient Rome. So through listening and following her truth that went against the Roman Empire and was being buried alive in catacombs outside of Rome, Sherry is a psychic medium, and she's been doing that for 30 years. Sherry!
Hello, welcome to the show. Hey, how are you?
Nice to be good.
It's so great to have you with us today. We appreciate it so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
My, oh my, you have a very interesting story. So from what I understand, you are a reincarnation of a Vestal Virgin?
Yes.
Cool. Yeah. What does that mean? What is a
cool.
Vestal?
Cool, what does that mean?
It sounds cool.
Yeah.
That's great. Well,
I said to my husband, does anybody even know what Vestal Virgin is? You know, I think it's an archaic term unless you're familiar, but in the back in the Roman Empire, there were six appointed young women that were brought in about the age of 9 or 10 to serve 30 years as Vestal Virgins. What that meant was that they kept the perpetual fire burning in the fire temple of Vesta in Rome. Mm-hmm. So they had to keep that fire burning 24/7, 365 days a year. And they also were involved with other sacred tasks like reading the prophecies, reading the books of the oracles, and also doing ritual ceremonies, making sacred cakes, that sort of thing.
Go ahead.
Can you tell us what were they, when they were keeping the fire going, what was the purpose of that?
The fire, because there was no electricity, right? So the fires always had to be going for the temp, for each of the homes to have a fire. So, and also if the fire went out politically, that was a disaster. That was saying the Roman Empire was in trouble. So as long as the fire was burning, people had fire for their homes, but also it was a signal to the rest of the world that the Roman Empire was alive and in control.
And so how long, first of all, how long did you do it for? And then when did you start getting memories that this was you?
Well, I had been told many, many years ago through a past life reading that I was a Vestal Virgin, sort of what happened. And I'm like, maybe that's true. But in the meantime, in the pagan tradition, there's a goddess called Bridget, and she's part of the Celtic tradition. So the fire keepers would keep the fire burning for the same reason in Ireland. So I identified with that part of it. But about 7 years ago, I had these downloads of information, and I had to sit there literally for like 3 days writing as fast as I could as it came through.
What brought it on? Was it something that, was it an accident or a trauma?
No trauma, no accident. It just came through. it was the right time, I suppose. So I wrote 100 pages.
Just like that.
Yeah, just like that. Hours and hours. I was living by myself. So this is what I did day after day until it came to a point where the memories were too overwhelming and upsetting. And so it freaked me out. So I put it away and I said, I can't deal with these memories anymore. It was too intense. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to put it aside. Well, I put it aside for 7 years. Mm. And then 7 years later, I'm now on this beautiful piece of land in this very peaceful office my husband built. And all of a sudden, guess what? I run across this script, this manuscript that I had written 7 years ago. And the signal in my head's like, it's time to finish this book. So nice. It was that I'd written the first draft and I came and picked it back up, put it all in Word, and then did some research about Roman history and added research to it as well.
What do you think made you more ready now, 7 years later, to finish the work that you started versus then? So from what I understand is when you were doing it, it was like a download and you're like, get out of me kind of thing, right? And so now 7 years later, as we fast forward to that, now it's like, I should write it. What do you think, what triggered that?
I believe that there is a divine purpose to the timing of when it came out. The timing and the messages of the book talk about we all have choices to make. And the choices we make are based on whether or not we want to live in our truth, whether or not we're going to be afraid to speak our truth, how moral or how in tune are we going to be in our lives. And there's several factors or themes that are current to things that are going on now. We have a parallel with Amata, the character in the book. It was at the end of the Roman Empire, as the empire started to fall, there was a lot of themes that have to do with like animal sacrifice that she had a problem with. There was pedophilia. And so there's some current themes that I cover in the book.
Is it astrologically speaking? Are we going through the same?
I think so, April. I do. I believe that Amata, the story's coming through now because we're going through a similar time in history where the fall of an empire, this time this country's empire, which is all about like the way the world that we've known it changes.
I'm sorry. Do you think when you said that with our country falling, are you saying that you think the United States, well, from, you know, if you look at it from the news, it looks like it's falling, but do you think that it is falling?
It's restructuring, because what happened with the Roman Empire is the Roman Empire, quote, fell, but there were certain elements of the Roman Empire that stayed intact and continued through with this blood sacrifices and a lot of things that are going on in the world that people don't want to talk about, let alone find out about. Mm-hmm. So it's more like the collapse of the empire is a reshape and a restructuring. And at that point in time, we've all got choices to how we want to live and move forward with this rebuilding of our worlds.
Is it going to be the proverbial battle of good versus evil that we're going through right now, and people will have to choose a side kind of thing?
Yes, it's all about choice. Yes, and we choose. And in this case, Amata chose to go against the empire, but stand for her own truth of what she thought was right. And to go against the empire, she knew she was doing it, but she had to make a choice. And so to me, I think this whole thing's coming out now because we're all having to be asked to make a choice. What side are we going to be on? What perspective of reality are we going to choose? Are we going to follow our truth or our heart? Or are we just going to just ignore it?
So Amata, the character in the book, is a female?
Yes. Amata, by the way.
Hence the virgin.
Yes.
Well, Amata is actually the title, like queen, princess, priestess. Amata is a title given to each of the Vestal Virgins. Mm-hmm. And so it means beloved.
Beloved. That's my last name. Right there.
And that's why it was very interesting.
Beloved.
Amata, and your both names start with A and your last name's Amata. So I thought, okay, beloved. This God sent this God sent this. Your story told.
That's awesome. What do you think your role is now in this lifetime with it?
Well, what I do in the book is in the prologue and the epilogue is I correlate the themes of the book, the themes of her life, into my own life. So, for instance, she was an oracle. She was a prophetess. She was a musician. She was a singer. She had a lot of the same gifts that I have now. In the story, her birth name is Daphne. And Daphne, in the Greek myth, was a virgin who was being chased by Apollo. So she turned herself into the laurel tree to escape his getting her. But anyway, it's the eternal virgin. And what happens with the Vestal Virgins is that after 30 years of service, they're able to go out into the world and live their own life free, to get married, to own a home. Okay, so we rewind back into my life, and it's, all right, well, I got married really young, had a child really young, got divorced really young. And so for 30 years, all I did was practice my priestess work. Hmm. And after 30 years of that, I met the man that I'm now married to.
Aw, congratulations.
Your psychic medium gifts as they come to you, do you see them, or is it more like a vibration as you're getting them?
I'm very clairaudient. As a musician, I'm very clairaudient. So that's the primary way that it comes through. When the story came through, it was being told to me. So I will see things, but I will hear things like it's being dictated to me. And then I share that information with people.
Who or what was giving you the messages?
Well, if I'm speaking to someone who has lost a loved one on the other side, then it's that person that comes through.
I mean, when you were retrieving the Vestal information.
You know, April, I'm going to say I'm not sure. Hmm. I'm either thinking that it was that aspect of me in that lifetime that needed to come through and tell the story, because she never got to tell the story, or it was just something that I tapped into in the Akashic. I really can't say. It was just a fast and furious download.
And the Vestal Virgin, so would that kind of be like almost like a nun in today's terms?
Yes.
Yeah,
they were called virgins because they weren't allowed to do, they were a bride of the Roman state. So they could not have relationships, marriage. They lived in these apartments, in the apartments that were made for them. And then right beside their apartments, in the building where they all lived, was the temple of Vesta, where the fire was kept.
Sherry, we're gonna take a quick break. Hang tight. We'll be right back, everybody. Right. More with Sherry and more about the Vestal Virgin. So hang tight. When freedom is just out of reach and speaking the truth can destroy you, do you do what is right or what is easy? Sherry Lassiter, practicing psychic medium for 30 years, channels her past life and brings the story of a Vestal Virgin alive in this gripping tale called A Modest Choice. To find out more, go to sherrylassiter.net. That's CHERRYLASSITER.net. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Spiritually Raw. Thank you so much. We are with Sherry Lassiter here. So, Sherry, before we went to break, we were just kind of touching base on the Vestal Virgin and, you know, that they weren't allowed to have relations for 30 years. So if their job was to keep the fire burning, if you would, whose infinite wisdom was it to say, well, you can't have relations? And how did that actually, you know, what was the purpose of that? And what did that even have to do with someone just saying, my job is to keep the fire burning?
They had to stay pure. It was about purity, complete purity, and that they were giving their life force, life essence, everything dedicated to the Roman state. They were brides of the Roman state. They were controlled by the high priest, Maximus, Virgin Maximus. That's the female priestess. And then the high priest was the one that controlled them. And they would, what was really one thing very interesting is they kept what was called the sibling oracles from the Oracle of Delphi and many of the ancient oracles. They had those texts there. And so people that had questions, mostly of political nature, would come and the priestess, the Vestal Virgin, would read from that book to give them some idea about what was coming in the future.
So they were looked upon very highly then.
Oh my gosh, they were prized. They were held in high esteem. They were only chosen if they were pure, the way they looked, the way they could have no imperfections. They had to be from a high, upstanding family. Mm. So that I only come from like the best of the best. And then they were held and they were treated like royalty for their whole lives. But of course, on the other side of that, you're lonely. You have your sisters. Mm-hmm. You know, but you have to wear all this garb every day, all the time.
At what point, if someone was chosen to become a Vespa Virgin, was there an age like, okay, you're at this age and then you can now be a Vespa
Virgin? Nine or ten.
So nine or ten is when you're chosen. Now, is it from the family who have to give up their daughter? How did that work? Were they approached? Were they compensated?
I do not believe they were compensated. That might be wrong with my research, but they would gather together candidates from high families, prestigious families, and they would gather them in the courtyard and they would choose which new candidate they wanted to bring in. And then what the high priest would do was after the choice was made, as he would go into the house of this little girl and say, Amata, I seize thee. And there's a Latin thing that they say, which I can't remember right now, but it's basically, I seize thee. And so he takes her out of the house and takes her directly to the house of the Vestal Virgin.
Oh, there was so the parents have no say in the matter?
Yeah, there was nothing they could do?
No.
Really?
Wow.
They're strangely proud. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Strangely proud. They're no longer part of the family. They've taken away, but it's an honor to have your child be a Vestal Virgin, even if that child isn't in your life anymore. And you may only see her riding down the streets in a carriage.
We're going to move on from the Vestal Virgin because there's a lot to talk about with you here. But before we go there, so when they were given to the, you know, released from their family, if you would, or taken from their family, were they able to ever allow to see their family again? Or was once they're gone for at least that 30 years, and maybe when they're after 30 years of service, then they can reconnect?
From what I gather, now I did not remember that on a past life level, but my research, there didn't seem to be any communication or relationship between the family. Hmm. So I think the family could maybe see them riding through the forum. The family could walk by the Temple of Vesta and see them tending the fire. They were also, the Vestal Virgins went to a lot of the games at the amphitheaters and the chariot games, the chariot races, so maybe they'd see them there, but there was no more relationship.
Do you think they were they very like, kind of like yourself? I mean, were they very psychic, you know, yes. Intuitive at that? I mean, would royalty come out to them and say, you know, kind of like ask the Vespa Virgins what they think? Would they have that level of intuitiveness?
They were 9 years old or 9 or 10. They wouldn't know. They would go by prestige of family and purity and impurity, which of course they were pure. And they had no imperfections mentally, physically, or emotionally. Mm. So it was just based on that. So they would make the choice, and then this Vestal Virgin that they chose, Daphne, who then was Amata, she played the lyre. And as in Daphne, that she was named up in the Greek myth, she was a prophetess, she was an oracle, she was a psychic. And so she had these gifts on top of being chosen to be pure of imperfect.
Mm-hmm. Moving past that now, or let's go backwards a bit if we can. So not so far as the Vespa Virgin, but maybe a little bit forward than that, in between, somewhere closer to where we're at today. You grew up in an Episcopalian family?
Yeah.
Okay. And so what was that like for you now being a psychic medium where you're at? What was that experience like for you to grow up in that? And where are you at today with how you see your faith and how you see that you were taught as a child?
Well, it was a juxtaposition because it was back when I was being raised up and growing up, even though I was in private school, my mother was off reading Edgar Cayce and the Seth material. Hmm. These are very intense, in-depth texts and material. So I was super curious and I had psychic experiences as a child and I was drawn to those type of books. And so in reading them, I opened up a lot more and a lot faster. But then I would go to church and I would hear hellfire and damnation. And at one point I had a dog and my little puppy, she died. And I said, I know her soul is still with me. So I went and made an appointment with the father. And he said, dogs don't have souls. And I sat there right there and I was like 12. I'm like, he's wrong. There's something wrong with his story. So I began to feel like, where's the divine feminine? And where is this divine feminine? It's missing. There's no kindness. There's no gentleness. And from the background that I came from the upbringing, not so much my parents, but what the indoctrination was, it seemed to lack something. So then I went in search of that something, the earth religions, the goddess, the divine feminine. And I became just this, and because I was also psychic, it just set me up like I was just pushed onto that path. Next thing I know, I'm leading rituals, doing all these crazy things. Okay, so to get to the second part of that question, I was pretty much like threw the baby out with the bathwater. I'm like, Jesus, I don't know, you know, I'm not sure about that. But then one time I had a dream, and in the dream he said, I want to come and work with you and help you with the work that you do with other people.
This is Jesus. This is Jesus in the dream?
Yeah, yes. So immediately, like, I'm paying attention to that, but my path of understanding was more Eastern. Mm-hmm. So I started to study where was Jesus doing when he went to India? What did he learn? He learned with the Buddhas, with the masters, with the teachers. He learned a lot of those ancient meditations. He learned.
Do you think that's where the missing years of Jesus
went? Yeah, he was in India. Mm-hmm. He was in India, and know him as Isha. Ancient texts and traditions say that he was there, and he studied with all these ancient teachers, and then he brought that back to the West. So I went that route because I didn't have the resistance to it. And so then I began to like, I've got to reconcile the Western and the Eastern adaptation to who Jesus is, who the Christ is. And so since then, he's been very much a part of my life, very in a very powerful way, so that I can say that I'm pagan and I'm Christian. And I don't think that I have to pick one. I think that I can be both, because there are ancient Christians were just as persecuted as the pagans were.
Mm-hmm. The version that then biblically that, you know, we hear or see of the Jesus Christ there versus the one that you've seen, comparatively speaking, how close were they as far as their belief systems or their views on everything, and also physically, you know, from what you know?
The language and the way that it was spoken, where Jesus talked in metaphors, and you're like, what does that mean? I went deeper into it. It's like, what did he mean by this? And I really tried to bring it into real time now, and to take it out of the thee and the thou and the metaphors that at the end of the day don't really make that much sense. So I studied a lot with Yogananda, who, of course, he's passed now, but he wrote a book called, A Second Coming of Christ, where Yogananda, a guru, the first one that came to the West back in the 30s, sat down and meditated with his friend Jesus. And said, what do you mean by this? What do you mean by this part? And he sat and for however long it took him, and interpreted in connection with Jesus in meditation to explain what he meant by these different passages and different teachings.
Did you say that? I just want to make sure what you just said.
Yeah.
Did you say you studied with Yogananda, or you studied about Yogananda?
Yes, he's died a long time ago, but I studied the Yogananda's work, and as I took yoga teacher training, so that was part of it, the philosophy, the religion, all of that. So I studied it, but then I just fell in love with it, and I felt like he was like a Christ-like being speaking from the East.
Do you think Jesus was married?
Yes, I absolutely do.
Did he have children?
Yes.
How'd he die?
You know, I'm on the fence with that. And one day I know he didn't die on the cross. Okay, this is what I think, this in my perspective, what may have happened was, if you're over in India and you've learned how to meditate and stop your heart rate for a certain amount of time, and to take certain herbs maybe that stop your heartbeat, how do we know that he was not able to do that, be taken off the cross, put behind that stone, and then come out of that meditation and be back in his body again.
And then go where?
From some of what I've heard, to go to the south of France.
That's what I heard too.
They're saying that he was buried actually in, oh my gosh, that place in India. Starts with a K.
Kashmir? Kashmir?
Yes, April, yes. Yes, they say he was buried in Kashmir. But he also, Mary Magdalene, the children went to the south of France. Mm-hmm. So what happened in between, I'm not sure, but I feel like he went to India and Mary went to the south of France.
So why do you think that he has been portrayed as holier than thou and sinless? And I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm asking a question.
Yes, I know. I get it. I mean, I would not consider myself a Christian. And I don't know what to say about that now. But what I think the portrayal is that, let's go back to the Roman Empire. In the Roman Empire, the gods were worshipped. The gods were perfect. The gods were sinless. The gods were perfect. So I think Jesus, the man, and the teachings were one thing. But I think the Vatican will say, heaven help me, I'll probably kill for this. The Vatican said, well, we're just going to keep this Roman Empire going under the guise of Jesus. And we're going to have these Roman gods like Jupiter and Mars still active within the religion and just pretty much steal the Christian religion away and adapt their old ways of greed, control, running over people. Why was he portrayed as sinless? Because he had to be perfect, mm-hmm. like the
for the whole story.
For the whole story to work.
For the story to work, he had to be perfect.
Yeah, yeah, and of course he wasn't. He was a human,
right?
Definitely a human. And as we each have Christ within us, we can rise up to that level and have Christ within ourselves. It's an energy. It's a vibration. It's a consciousness.
We're coming down the end of the show here today, and I want to give our audience an opportunity of how they can find you and learn more about you and connect with you. But one question before we do that, do we make the mistake ourselves? Are we gods and goddesses incarnate? And is that a mistake that we made by not necessarily acknowledging that?
I think you really hit the nail on the head there, Jay. I do.
Something I did right.
Yeah, society and government suppress us and take our power away and make us think we don't have any. Then we'll never reach our potential as long as we believe the lie that we are not capable of that.
Are we coming out of the lie?
I believe this breakdown, this revolution that's going on now, is a chance for people to break out of the lie and to assume their own power, or to give it away once again. And I believe there's a point in time where the consciousness of the planet and the vibration is raising up so much that it makes, we'll say, the dark side a little bit nervous that we're all, the humans, are going to start to take their power.
Mm. That's Sherry, thanks for that. Thanks for being here with us, and thanks for sharing that for yourself. Yeah, it's great to have you. Can you let everybody know how they can connect with you and where they can find out more about you?
Okay, my website is www.sherrylassiter.net. Sherry, C-H-E-R-I-E, like the French Cherie, Lassiter, L-A-S-S-I-T-E-R, SherryLassiter.net. And then I'm on Facebook, on YouTube, but it's always under that name. So it's just making sure there's one R in Sherry and Lassiter.net. That'll take you right to the website. And that's the start.
And the book is coming out in?
Book is coming out early to mid-July.
Mid-July.
I'm waiting for that final copy that you get to approve everything. That's what I'm waiting on.
Yeah, we'll get it in there for you. Okay. But it was so nice to meet you. Yeah, thank you so much. It's really nice.
All right. Yeah, namaste.
Congratulations on your continued journey. Namaste to you. Wow. What a doll, huh?
That was so interesting. See, you learn something new every day on Spiritually Raw. Yeah. I never even heard of a Vestal Virgin until yesterday, actually.
Yep, and I made a good point. See that?
And you made, yes, let's make a point that you made a good point.
Let's do that, please. And a comment.
And a comment. Yeah. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed the show as much as we did. Thank you so much for tuning in. We We certainly appreciate it. And together, we will turn the universal key to global harmony and create a unified world. Thank you for tuning in. And remember, tune in often. Tell all your friends. And most importantly, may all your dreams come true. Many blessings.